There's a podfuckery afoot. What would happen if a crew of podfickers were to record the same story in their own style? The start and finish of the fix are the same, but we've teamed up with a crew of writers to give you something a little different in the middle. The writers and podfickers won't be revealed to each other until posting day. This is a podfuckery narrated by Cheesecake 3. The long nights of winter are some of the crew's favourites, actually, because there's fuck all to do. There's dinner, yeah. Usually delicious, always slightly surprising, always served with Roach's trademark mix of threatening and nonchalant, with a dash of sweetness these days. There's a final task of the night, making sure everything's squared away, shipshape and all that, but this time of year there's not as much trade, so they're a little less likely to need to react on a moment's notice, so it's not that they let things slide much. Rather, it's that things get a little looser as the night stretch towards the new year. And then, of course, there's reading time, which, well, sometimes it's delayed a bit. Captains? Frenchie knocks again at the door. Three quick raps, and inside there's a scuffle of movement and, is that a bell? Something jingling, anyway, and a giggle, and a thump. And Frenchie glances over his shoulder at Wee John, shrugs, and decides he'll come back in a few, maybe. Or send Lucius? It's his turn to want to gouge his eyes out, actually, he figures. The thing is, though, they are working their way through the one with the wooden boy, and this time Steed's promise they're going to finish it before the new year, which is, by Frenchie's calculations and by the Gregorian calendar, that weaselly slippery thing, all its leap years and sneaky bits, and by the ship's logbook too, it's tomorrow. So, they've got pages to go before they sleep, is all he's saying. And they've got plans tonight too, plans that are non-negotiable. He knocks again. And this time, silence. He swings his lute down from his shoulder and strums thoughtfully. He might need some reinforcements for this. Fang's on watch duty tonight. He likes the first watch of the night, actually. Likes the quiet of it. Likes the way things don't tend to go wrong yet. And likes the way he can settle down afterwards and sleep through till the morning, if everything goes all right. Curled up beside Brochi or Lucius or tucked tight between Frenchie's elbows and Wee John's warmth. It's a good place, this ship, even if it's not like any other ship he's ever been on. Maybe especially because of that. So when he hears the crash from below, he has literally no idea what to expect when he rushes down. He follows the sound of voices to the captain's cabin, finds most of the crew gathered around the door, which is not particularly odd. It's a ship without a strict chain of command, usually, and so they're always up in each other's business. He still remembers fondly the way he'd stretched out on Steed's soft silk sheets for Lucius to sketch him that first week on the ship. I don't know, babe, Pete's saying. I wasn't, like, watching them. But they were in there, Lucius says. I heard them in there. We're going to miss our reading time, says Swede. If we don't find Captain soon, we'll never know if the wooden boy gets flesh. They probably fucked off into one of the stupid tunnels, says Jim. We can finish the fucking thing tomorrow, whatever. Captain said by New Year's, Swede moans. Is it New Year's Eve? Guys, Olawande raises his voice over the chatter. I'm sure they're fine, I'm sure. Is that blood? Jeng says from inside the cabin, where she's kneeling by a stain on the floor. Nah, says Roach, pushing his way in beside her. It's oil. It was not me, the Swede interjects. Jackie keeps the massage oil on her ship? It's thicker than any kind I've seen before. Roach holds up two fingers covered in a dark, viscous fluid. Slippery, too. Olu, is this what you use on the interior engines? Olu takes a closer look, then shakes his head. No, I mean, that's definitely machinery oil, but it's not like any of the stuff we've got here on the ship. Captain ordered a special PFPE mixture. Says it's better than Max. In a loud whisper, Pete tells Lucius, he means perfluoropolyethers. Mac is multi... Babe, that is so hot that you know that, and I definitely want you to repeat it later, but now's not the time. Besides, Olu continues, there aren't any engines in the captain's cabin, so... So we've got mysterious machine oil from a machine that doesn't exist and two missing captains. The crew exchange looks before rushing to place a single finger to their respective noses. Not it. Tell me what to do, Ed. Please, I can't help you if I don't know what's going on. Steed has brought them to the medical bay of the ship, helplessly wringing his oil-slicked hands. He's a little out of breath from their sprint through the secret hallway, the one he'd had connected to his cabin for emergencies. It begins inside his closet and splits in two directions. Turn left and you find the med bay. To the right, the escape pods. It's a clever design that he's unfortunately never been able to show off to anyone, as he's had to keep it secret in the unlikely case of a mutiny. He had half-dragged Ed through the tunnel, leaving behind a terrifying trail of inky black oil, more proof that there is something seriously wrong with his beloved. Steed scolds himself for not better stocking the medbay months ago, back when he first learned about Ed's, well, Ed's condition. "I'm fine, Steed," Ed's voice comes weakly from where he's sitting up on a surgical table. He had lost quite a lot of oil. Not that Steed knows what's normal for a mechanoid, didn't even know any had made it off-planet all those centuries ago. So it's nice to see him semi-vertical. Helps quell a bit of the panic that's been flooding his system since this started. They'd been having such a lovely time on the sofa, reminiscing about that enticing cat bell when Ed had started shaking violently, oil leaking out his nose and ears. "Sorry I scared you. Didn't realise how long it's been since my last tune-up. My relief valve must have eroded pretty bad." "Your poor body has been through so much," Steed says. He starts opening cabinets, sorting through supplies that he has no idea what to do with just to keep his hands busy. "But we'll get you fixed right up. Olu is a wonderful mechanic, and I'm sure the others can help too." "These are rare parts, Steed. Olu doesn't have mechanoid shit just lying around the ship, especially not for a model as old as me." "All right then, I'll have Buttons chart a course the Republic. They've got everything there." "No, Steed." "No? I can't. Not if it means telling them what I am." Steed sets his jaw and lets out a slow breath before he responds to his stubborn boyfriend. "I know you wanted to keep it a secret, and I understand, I do. But Ed, it's been months now. They've all forgiven you. Jim even talks to you now. I promise you, if you tell the truth, they'll all accept you. I know it." Ed shakes his head, grimacing at the painful movement. "You weren't there, Steed. Things I did to them after you left. I acted like a monster. No more second chances. If they find out I'm..." "Well, honestly, Ed, if they didn't realise you weren't human when you survived getting your head crushed by Jim, they really have no business being upset now." He reaches out and grabs Ed's dear hand, so familiar to him at this point. "Ed, please, the crew loves you. I love you. Trust in that, won't you?" Ed attempts a smile, but it's ruined by drops of oil leaking from his eyes. "I can't, Steed. I'd rather die." Steed nods solemnly. He can see there's no changing Ed's mind, that he's determined to go it alone. "All right then, let's go." "What?" Ed's eyes catch his, huge and shocked. "You and me. Come on. I've had a go bag stashed in the escape pod from the beginning. Actually, I think the last of the marmalade is in there." Jim tosses yet another thick-as-fuck policy and procedure manual over their shoulder in frustration, and it lands with a thump on the floor. "I can't even remember what we're looking for anymore," they complain. "Uh-oh," Archie says cheerfully. "I was hoping you knew. I wasn't actually listening to Olu's instructions." Rolling their eyes, Jim slumps against the work table. "I don't think Olu really thinks there's anything to find here. He was just giving out busy work, trying to distract us from the disappointment of missing out on the story." Archie hops up on the table next to them, her legs kicking in the air. "Why are they so excited about the wooden boy anyway? I mean, we all know what's going to happen in the end." "What do you mean?" Jim squints at her, suspicious. "Archie, have you heard this story before?" "I mean, not this exact story, but what do you think is going to happen? The puppet kid is an asshole. He's fucked up every chance he's been given, and now he's being punished on the Donkey Island. He's in hell, and he's going to stay there. That's how these stories go." "Not the stories Bonnet tells." "Okay, what do you think is going to happen?" Archie asks, crossing her arms. "He gets to become a real boy after all that shit he did? The bug dude fucking warned him and he still did it." "So?" Jim can feel their blood getting hot the way only Archie brings out in them. "He made a bad decision. You think he deserves to be punished for the rest of his life? Fuck that." "And what about the people that love him?" Oluwando appears in the doorway and Jim sags in relief at the sight of him. What with the missing captains and mystery oil, it's left Jim feeling all weird and itchy. "What do they deserve? Geppetto is out there searching for his kid. He doesn't care what he's done or what choices he's made. He just wants the boy he loves to come home." "Oh, fuck," Archie groans. "I'm going to cry tonight, aren't I?" "Don't worry, babe." Jim reels her in with a tug on her bicep and reaches out to Olu to complete the sandwich. "We'll bring tissues." Steed holds the door open like a gentleman, and Ed has a look around. He's never seen an escape pod look so cozy before. He shakes his head in wonder at his boyfriend. Who thinks to put a tea kettle in a fucking escape pod? Steed Bonnet, that's who. Steed Bonnet, who is willing to abandon his ship that he spent his fortune building and his crew, who means so much to him, all just to protect Ed's secret. Steed bustles around, busy as a pulsar, getting the pod prepped to launch, and it strikes him how incredible it is that they even found each other. Because the thing is, Ed doesn't belong here. He's not human like the rest of the crew. He's not even real, and Steed is... Well, Steed is the most human creature he's ever met. And Steed loves Ed. It's taken a while for Ed to believe it, to trust that Steed could love someone like him, but it's here, tangible, in this tiny pod. The love is real. Always has been. And it's time to trust that. He places a hand on Steed's shoulder, interrupting his preparations. Steed, stop. No? But I thought the Republic would have, you said? No, I mean, we're not running. I'm ready. Ready? And Steed looks at him with stars in his eyes, and Ed knows he's made the right choice. Oh, Ed, I'm so proud of you. You won't regret it. And the thing is, Ed doesn't regret it. There are questions from the crew, accompanied by a wide range of reactions. Steed is there for it all, arm wrapped around his shoulders, a comforting present while he faces the music. Amazingly, it turns out Auntie and Zheng both have experience with mechanoid maintenance and are able to work out a temporary patch until they can dock for more supplies. Button says he's known all along, had assumed it was common knowledge. It's Jim that surprises Ed the most, though. There's no anger from them, no betrayed looks or threats to throw him out the airlock. They're so calm, it's almost unnerving, and Ed can't help poking the bear a little bit. So you're just okay with this? Ed asks them. He can feel Steed bristle at the direction he's going, but Ed just squeezes his hand, silently reassuring his love that he needs to do this. No, like, cat bell or hair shirt punishment? Something to let you all know how sorry I am for hiding this from you? I mean, do you understand, right, how I'm literally 50 times stronger than all of you and nearly indestructible? You still think, I don't know, you think I deserve to be here? Jim makes eye contact for one tense moment, then returns their gaze to the knife they've been polishing. It's not about deserving, they say. It's about belonging. And you're one of us, so you stay. And maybe it is as easy as that. Maybe it's just about staying, not running, just putting down roots and seeing what grows. Can we get to the story now? Frenchie says. It's nearly midnight, and the new year needs to start off with a good omen. How is ending a book a good omen? Roach argues. Shouldn't you start the new year with a beginning? Does it really matter? Zheng says, her feet draped across Olu's lap. We all use different calendars anyway. A new year begins literally every day in this universe. The deck devolves into friendly banter, and Ed lets himself relax against Steed. It's not settled yet, he knows. They still have to find the right station to get the supplies he needs while staying under the radar. It's going to add new complications to their privacy, not to mention facing what it means to be an ageless mechanoid when you actually care about the fragile humans around you. Before tonight, Ed basks in the acceptance of his crew. He closes his eyes and listens to the bickering surrounding him, translating it into the love language that it is, because he knows now this isn't the end of his story. All right, settle down, crew, Steed says, rearranging the blanket so it drapes over both of them. We're all anxious to see how it ends. An expectant calm spreads over the crew, eyes closed or on Steed, hands still or busy with repetitive tasks, potties curled together or splayed out. Steed takes a deep breath, settles his glasses on his nose, and begins. The end.